Cheerscast is a part of the Fire and Water Network.
Listen, Sam, old man, I have an errand to run. Now, Diane is going to stay here. I'd appreciate it if you would keep an eye on her.
For you, Sumner, old man, I'll keep both my eyes on her.
Sumner, am I stupid to let you go see a woman you were once in love with?
Oh, my darling, I'm leaving you alone in a bar. Which one of us is the stupider, Sam?
Too close to call.
You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello, and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and even though I don't have a guest this episode, I will not be alone. Yes, this episode of Cheerscast is going to be quite different from the norm. The normal, I mean, not norm, the typical. This episode is going to be different. The reason for that is we're covering a different type of episode of Cheers. We are finally here, folks. Season 9, Episode 8, better known as the 200th Episode Special. This episode originally aired on NBC on Thursday, November 8th, 1990. It was an hour-long show, doubling the length of a typical episode. For syndication, for streaming platforms, and other releases, the episode is broken into two parts. So on some formats, you might see this listed as Season 9, Episodes 8 and 9. I'm treating this whole thing as one episode. That was how it first aired. That was the intention. And it's the 200th episode special, not the 200th and 201st. But the number of minutes allotted for the special is not the only thing that makes this Cheers episode different. For one thing, this episode is not set in Cheers. It's set on a stage. And there's no plot, no story. There's not even the regular characters. Ted Danson, Rhea Perlman, Kelsey Grammer, and the rest of the cast all appear, but not as Sam Malone, Carla LeBeck, Fraser Crane, etc. They appear as themselves. For the celebration of Cheers' first 199 episodes, the cast, the creators, and writers gathered on a stage for a moderated panel discussion of the show's history, its characters, its highs, and lows. The seven regular cast members were joined by recurring guest actors, B.B. Neuwirth and Roger Rees, as well as former star Shelley Long, who had not been seen on Cheers since the end of Season 5. Also on stage were off-screen driving forces of Cheers, the creators James Burrows, Glenn and Les Charles, and writers Sherry Aiken, Bill Steinkellner, and Fief Sutton. The discussion was moderated by John McLaughlin, host of the political and current events talk show, The McLaughlin Group, which ran for nearly 40 years on PBS. In addition to the panel discussion, which I will get to in a few minutes, this special also served as a clip show, re-airing some of Cheers' funniest, saddest, wackiest, and most musical moments of the first 8 years, from the first meeting of Sam and Diane in the pilot to Rebecca's numerous breakdowns over Robin Colcord. I remember when this episode first aired. We taped the show, which was a thing people used to do. I can't tell you how many times I re-watched this episode over the years, but it was a lot. It truly was special to see so many highlights of the show's humor condensed into one episode. But also remember that I was still fairly young, and at the time, there were a ton of episodes from the early seasons that I hadn't seen or was too young to remember. So for a long time, until I started watching the show every day in syndication, this special was my only real reference point for Sam and Diane's relationship and for the character of Coach. I knew all along, whenever I got to this episode, if I got to this episode, I couldn't cover it like a normal show. Having a guest come on to share his or her notes about the jokes we've already discussed on previous episodes, that would feel redundant. But there wasn't enough meat from the discussion segments to merit an entire episode of this podcast. I briefly, very briefly, considered making this episode a clip show of my own, gathering clips of me and my guests discussing the best jokes or home runs of all the previous episodes. That would take an absurdly long time to compile on my part, and the result would be not as funny or interesting as desired. But I did want to hear from a lot of my guests, so I reached out and got them to share some of their favorite moments, jokes, character beats, or whole episodes. I couldn't get every one of my former guests to contribute. That, too, would have been too much work. I didn't want to kill myself editing this show together, so I just went with a relative few. I have separated their comments into three sections, between which I will share more of my thoughts on the 200th special, the commentary from the cast and crew, and especially the fact that they got Diane back, sort of. For now, though, let's hear from some of our own regulars.
A clip show, Ryan. Well, okay, in no given order. The first one, this one's iconic. I don't even have to give you an episode title. You'll recognize it. It's the one where Norm walks in and the whole bar goes, "Norm!" And then just offbeat, you hear Diane say, "Norman?" Like she can't bear to be informal. It's a great, great moment.
Afternoon, everybody.
Norman?
I'm sure that a lot of people say this, but my favorite Norm entrance line.
Hey, what's happening, Norm?
It's a dog-eat-dog world, Sammy, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
What makes this so memorable is that's an everyman statement. Norm is the perfect example of the everyman guy. You know, the guy at the bar that you all know, the lovable loser, the guy with the jokes and punchlines, and the guy who struggles through life like we all do. We can empathize with him, because he is us. And the joke works, because we know exactly what that is like.
One of my favorite Norm stories is from Norm's first hurrah. Diane has been telling Norm that he shouldn't be a quitter and that he has to keep pushing to succeed. And Norm finally has this realization that he almost made his big career mistake because he was doing something that wasn't him.
I'm tired of all these people saying, "Yeah, Peterson, you got to push. You got to get ahead. You got to make that goal." I don't even want to make the goal, Diane. I want to be a bench warmer, okay? The world needs bench warmers. I mean, if there were no bench warmers, what would we have? Cold benches, a lot of cold benches, and the world does not need that, Diane. In this great pageantry of life, Norm Peterson may be a motionless lump, but he's a very damn good one.
I love that. I love that Norm has a life philosophy, and it develops across the series, but it's pretty much based on what he says in this scene. Like, he has his own aspirations, but they're not really based on what normal society would have them be. It's just a good little encapsulation of Norm, I think.
When I think of Cheers, you simply have to think of Norm. Because our recently departed George Wendt made this character his own in a way that everybody recognizes. He's truly the one that everybody knows his name. How can you think of Norm without one of his one-liners like, "How's the world treating you, Norm? Like a baby treats a diaper."
It's hard to pick a favorite Norm moment, but I believe my favorite would be in season 6, episode 18. Norm enters Mr. Drake's room. He's sleeping because he's so jet lagged from this long trip. And he says, "Sir, I've had this fantasy that's haunted me all my life. At night when I'm laying in bed, it comes and torments me." And he tells him that he has this fantasy.
"Even though I was born poor and I'll never be a rich man, somehow it wouldn't make any difference if one time, sir, just one time, just one darn time, I could do something symbolic, like carry a rich man across the lawn in his pajamas."
And it's hilarious. And he does carry Mr. Drake in his pajamas around the lawn. But it's such a great episode that showcases George Wendt's ability. And also, it just showcases his relationship with Rebecca. And it's just very sweet and also hilarious.
This is something that has stuck with me since I saw it back when the show was still on the air. And it's something that has stayed with me all those years. It is a line I have used before and will continue to use again. And it's just very simple. Cliff has said something crazy.
"Yeah, it's a genetic quirk in the Clavin family that we all have two extra teeth. You see, that's the only way that we can prove that we are the rightful heirs to the Russian throne."
"Hello in there, Cliff. Tell me, what color is the sky in your world?"
Cliff had had surgery. Nobody came to visit him, and he realized just that he got on people's nerves and that he was a little too obnoxious for people. So he came up with a scheme to have an electric buzzer on him, and every time he'd say or do something obnoxious, there was somebody there who would kind of hit a buzzer, and he would get an electric shock.
"All right, who's got the button?"
"No buzzer here, I don't."
"Dance, mailman."
It ends up that the guy just keeps shocking him, and I believe hilarity ensues, because I just think it's John Ratzenberger's acting during that scene is just tremendous, and it's hilarious, and I just crack up laughing every time I see it.
When I knew they were going to be doing a Cliff episode, I sort of rolled my eyes. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to love this one because I just don't care about Cliff that much. And there were some funny shows. I just was never that big a fan of Cliff, except the moment in the first episode of season 6, Carla has put together a plan to bring back the regulars. They start doing the bit about the Screaming Viking to fool the Dwayne, the new bartender, and get him to quit.
There is no such thing as a Screaming Viking, I assure you, Miss Howe.
Everyone starts ordering, all the bar flies. Everyone who never gets a line gets a line. Everyone starts ordering.
Screaming Viking over here, please.
I don't know what's going on here, but I've been a bartender.
Bartender, make it two.
And it causes Dwayne to yell, there is no such thing as a Screaming Viking. And then out of the back, for the first time in the entire episode, comes Cliff going,
I think I have a Screaming Viking.
I swear to God, I think of it like when Han Solo comes in at the end of Star Wars and helps blow up the Death Star. You had forgotten that Cliff's not even in the episode, and then they brought him in at the exact right moment to be the capper to this plan, which you know is going to work, and we're going to get Cheers back the way we want it to be. And not only does it get a big laugh, but it gets a round of applause, because I think the audience is like, oh yeah, Cliff! I think Cliff is best in as a spice, not the main ingredient, and so when he was used like that, it was perfect.
A guy walks into the bar and tells Woody he has not been in the bar for 20 years.
See those stairs? They used to go down the other side of that wall. Mm-hmm. And this floor, when I was here, it was all ugly green tile.
Wow.
I guess everything changes in 20 years. They've even changed the paneling.
Where?
Over there behind Norm.
Because Norm is the constant at Cheers. Always was, always will be.
I kind of misspoke earlier when I said Cheers' 200th episode isn't set in the bar. There is one brief scene, the teaser, naturally, set in the bar and featuring one of our beloved characters. John McLaughlin, playing himself, walks into Cheers and orders a beer from Woody, who recognizes him from television, but doesn't quite know who he is. There's a somewhat predictable gag where Woody won't accept money for the drink until McLaughlin identifies himself and his own TV show, at which point Woody is so unimpressed, kind of disappointed even, that he charges him for the drink. During the panel portion of the show, McLaughlin moderates the Q&A with the cast and crew, and it's around these little interviews that the clip portion of the show is structured. We get a brief exchange with George Wendt, and then a montage of great Norm moments. Then a similar exchange with Rhea Perlman, followed by clips of Carla, then John Ratzenberger and Cliff. In the second half of the show, which is part two when it's split, we get these moments with Kelsey Grammer, Woody Harrelson, Kirstie Alley, and Ted Danson. We also get, sprinkled throughout, the creatives talking about larger themes of the show, such as the inspiration, the Sam and Diane relationship, the Sam and Rebecca relationship, the musical numbers, and the wanton acts of violence. And we get a segment dedicated to Coach, who you remember was played by Nicholas Colasanto. It's during this segment that James Burrows draws attention to the picture of Geronimo that had been in Colasanto's dressing room before he died, the picture they then hung on the set of Cheers as a silent memorial. This section, bizarrely, is also the only time we hear Shelley Long speak in the episode. She comments on how Diane related to Coach and the effect his death had on her, and I think her wording is particularly revealing when she says that Coach was Diane's only friend in the bar. She might as well have been saying Colasanto was Shelley's only friend in the cast. I think even as a kid, I picked up on that subtext. But that's all we get from Shelley Long, really. She doesn't say anything else about her character or her experience during the Sam and Diane segment. We get a few interesting, perhaps awkward facial reactions from her when Kirstie Alley is talking, but that's it. I want to explore this a little more, but before that, why don't we hear some more from our past guests?
I can remember there was an ad for that episode, and it showed a picture of Shelley Long looking as she did at the time, which she had kind of like this feathered hair, and it was dark, like brownish and red. It didn't look like Diane. But I remembered in the ads for that episode, they were like, and Diane's back. And I knew then, like, that wasn't true, that it wasn't Diane, it was Shelley Long. And I just remembered feeling like man, network television marketing departments just suck, right? Because they're willing to lie to their audience. As if Cheers needed help with ratings. You had to lie and say that Diane was back when she wasn't. I can only think how many people tuned in to see Diane return and then be like, who is this? John McLaughlin? What the hell is this? It's just like, oh man, television network, sometimes just the worst. Anyway.
Number two, this is also from one of the early seasons. Norm walks into the bar and everyone goes, Norm. And Diane is kind of in the back unseen and she goes, Norman? I love it.
Favorite gags from the history of Cheers. I've got so many, but when I think of the ones that I can just be driving in the car and think about them and just chuckle out loud, it's interesting. Two of them that pop into my mind are actually from season two. And the first one would be Homicidal Ham, when Diane and Andy are doing their Othello scene. And it gets worse and worse. And Diane knows that Andy is not going to get out of the scene until he strangles her. And at some point, you know, even great actress Diane has to break the scene and say,
"Help, this psycho's trying to kill me."
It's the only line of Shakespeare I ever understood.
That to me is my favorite coach line in the history of Cheers. And I can be thinking about that line just driving in the car, walking down the street, and burst out laughing.
One of my favorite quotes is in the scene with Sam and Diane. It's from Diane's Nightmare. She's dreaming that Sam is erudite and sophisticated. He's quoting Shakespeare. He's quoting William Blake. And he puts on this red velvet smoking jacket. And he's saying, like, come on, Diane.
You really didn't believe that buffoonish facade that I've been perpetrating for the benefit of my blue-collar clientele, did you?
He tells her he wants to play a little something from an opera he's been writing. It's based on the Old Testament. And so he's playing, and she's just, you know, swooning with desire for him.
Put the keyboard away and let me be the instrument you play on.
And my favorite quote is, Diane,
do you realize you just ended that proposition with a preposition?
Season 5, episode Everyone Imitates Art. Sam gets a quote-unquote poem published in a poetry journal. And, of course, that sends Diane into a spiral of jealousy and not understanding how this dimwit could get a poem published when she can't. A particularly great Shelley Long episode, because it's Diane being wound tighter and tighter and tighter, like a wet rag that you're squeezing out to get all the water out of. And she just gets worse and worse and worse. But the run that Diane goes on, where Frasier is like, why are you getting so upset about this? It's some small poetry journal that you know, nobody knows about. It's not like this is going to lead to anything. And she goes on this rant.
The original 600 readers drop their copies on buses, in taxicabs, in doctor's offices. And another 600 people pick them up and take them to the airport, where they go all over the country. And then they get taken on international flights. Terra del Fuego, Sierra Leone, all the remotest parts of the world. And soon, I defy you to find me a house, a hut, an igloo, or a wiki-up that doesn't have a copy on the coffee table.
First of all, it makes me laugh because it's just Shelley Long burning on all thrusters. It makes me laugh so hard. But it reminded me of a classic Abbott and Costello bit. Yes, Abbott and Costello. We all know I love how much Abbott and Costello. And yes, I'm comparing it to Cheers. But there's a bit where they do this math. They add these two numbers and Costello comes to a different number than is accurate. But it's this thing where you see them explain it. You see the step-by-step logic. And it makes sense in a step-by-step. And then you get to the conclusion and you go, what? Wait a minute. That makes no sense. And there's something about you being fooled along for the ride. And that's what Diane's whole thing reminds me of. All this makes sense. Oh, well, people are going to pick it up. And they're going to put it over here. And it's going to move to this. And it's going to move across the country. And it doesn't make any literal sense, because for Diane's theory to be right, it would mean there would have to be 10 million copies of this poetry journal. But it's the way she explains it just makes me laugh so hard, because it has an internal logic all its own, even though it is bonkers crazy. And the way she delivers it is absolutely gold standard. So that's one of my favorite Diane moments.
The best one-liner from a Barfly has to be Al Rosen yelling out,
Sinatra!
Twice when Carla is trying to make a connection to a fortune that said bigwigs to him falling down the stairs. A random patron completely drunk yelling out Sinatra to the question of who is a bigwig is even better when the question is repeated as, who is an even bigwig than Ronald Reagan? And Al again yells out
Sinatra!
You can see the cast trying their best not to laugh.
I love the character of Rebecca, And I've said it on this show, and I'll say it again. Kirstie Alley has some of the comedic timing of greats like Lucille Ball. The way she can cry and also be so articulate and that we can understand every word she's saying. And I think one of my favorite moments from the show that showcases this ability is in season 6, episode 11, called My Fair Clavin. Rebecca has started smoking again, and she vows that if she smokes again, she's going to do the most vile thing, and that would be go to bed with Sam. So, of course, our hero Sam hears this, and he vows to catch her doing this so he can get what he's been wanting for so long now.
Hey, where's the pool table? Wrong room.
Sam leaves, closes the door. Rebecca opens her mouth and pops back out a lit cigarette and just continues smoking. It is done so effortlessly and, frankly, artistically.
One of my favorite Rebecca scenes is from Please, Mr. Postman. Frasier's told Sam that all human animals, as he calls them, have a hair trigger erotic response to at least one of the 5 sensory stimuli. So Sam picks up on this, and he is trying to bait Rebecca into telling him if she has what he calls, like, just one of those. You know, he's trying to be a little bit coy about it.
Well, I am driven to a sexual frenzy by people who mind their own business.
Just one of my favorite lines. Sister delivery. She thought she was going to cut it off at that point with him. And then what follows is Sam ends up finding out that it's a song, and the song is You've Lost That Loving Feeling. So he gets a cassette tape of this, sets it up, goes in the office, plays the music, turns the lights off. Rebecca's working at her computer, and she knows that he's discovered the song, pulls her up, holding her. He's dancing seductively around the office while the music plays. And then when he sways close enough to the computer, she reaches over his shoulder and continues typing with one hand. So Sam just is completely chagrined. He gives up, lets her go. She's standing there typing, and he just slides her chair across to her and basically leaves defeated. It's almost like this little skit within the episode, but I really like that.
It's kind of a peripheral scene, because it turns out they're arguing over which show is better, the Addams Family or the Munsters, and they just keep going on and on and on and making these crazy comparisons. Tempers flare and they get really angry at each other.
I think that this bar is big enough for people who like the Addams Family and the Munsters.
And it's just kind of an example of how you could just have a side bit of humor in something can just take over in some ways.
It's the final 6 minutes from season 8, episode 16, finally part 2, when Rebecca has finally told Robin off for his dating other women and has come back to the bar. Sam convinces her to go for some self-respect, and then when Robin comes back, he, you know, tells her, well, I admire self-respect. This puts you in the lead. And of course, she gets all excited about she's winning.
I'm just gonna tell him it's over. I'll just say to him, that's it, sweet baby.
Kirstie Alley goes from miserable and crying to trying to have some measure of self-respect to completely throwing it away with such gleeful abandon because I am winning. I am winning.
Another favorite gag from the History of Cheers actually comes from season 2 as well, and it is from Fortune and Men's Weight. Really, it's not even one of our main regulars. It's one of our semi-regulars. It's the beloved Al, played by Al Rosen.
Sinatra!
It just kills me every time. I cannot even, if I ever see a footage of Frank Sinatra or I hear him on the radio, I cannot help but think of Al saying Sinatra and the reactions of everyone. It's one of the few times where you can actually see Rhea Perlman, Ted Danson, George Wendt cracking, you know, trying not to crack up in those moments. It's so brilliant, and it just comes out of nowhere when Carla is asking who a bigwig is.
No, bigger.
Sinatra!
And to come out and just say Sinatra, and that inimitable Al way, for me, is one of the great moments of Cheers.
The fact that we only get maybe 12 seconds of speech from Shelley Long during this episode highlights the thing that frustrates me so much about this as an adult. Watching this show at the beginning, and even watching it again and again, like I said when we taped it, it was different when I didn't have access to the entire series like I would when I collected the DVD sets and then the digital bundle. Then I focused all my attention on the clips, because so much of them I had never seen, or seen and didn't remember, or seen and did remember, but they were just so damn funny I wanted to watch them again. Now that I've watched the whole series however many times and scrutinized every episode for this podcast over the last 8 years or so, I just want to beg NBC or James Burrows or whoever I can to release the uncut video of that panel with the cast. The episode without commercials is roughly 45 minutes long, and I bet 35 of those minutes are the clips. Take away the teaser, I bet we only get about 8 minutes of the cast and crew discussion with McLaughlin, and that's counting his intro and outro. I'm sure that panel, when they filmed it on stage in front of the audience, I'm sure it was 60 or 70 minutes long. There's so much more we could have gotten from them. Bebe Neuwirth and Roger Rees are on stage as cast members. They don't say anything. And again, to only get like 15 seconds from Shelley Long, that's just criminal negligence. But I guess the fact that they convinced her to come back for this special at all was enough of a feat. I just want more.
Number 3. Very memorable moment in season 2. Norm walks into Cheers, and everyone goes, "Norm!" And you're used to it by now, but Diane goes, "Norman?" And it just hasn't stopped being amusing.
One of my favorite moments from Cheers is from very early on in the series. In fact, it's from the very first episode. And it's a scene that really lets us know what we can expect from the character of Coach.
Cheers. Yeah, just a sec. Is there a Rudy Pantuso here?
That's you, Coach.
Speaking.
No hesitation, no realization from Coach's face about what's going on or what kind of mistake he just made. Just goes right into continuing the conversation. And the best part is that Diane is right there in the scene watching this, and the horrified look on her face as it dawns on her of what is happening and what this place it might be that she's stuck in. It's just beautiful.
The thing that I love and miss the most is just the moments between Coach and Sam. I like sometimes where Coach is the mentor, Sam is the mentee, and then there's times where Coach is really off the mark and Sam has to kind of put his arm around his shoulder and mentor him. So this clip is like a beautiful moment between the two of them, and I miss it.
Albania.
Why'd you say it like that?
We learn our facts by associating countries with music.
Why?
Do you want to study alone?
No.
All right.
No.
One, two, three. Albania, Albania, you border on the Adriatic. Your land is mostly mountainous, and your chief export is chrome. You're a communist republic. You're a red regime. Sing it, Sam. Ready? Albania. Albania.
Now, as I say, being really tough at picking favorites, I will admit, when I do think of them, the episode Pick a Con, Any Con lives rent-free in my head. And our major characters are two actors we've sadly lost long ago, Nick Colasanto and Harry Anderson, Coach and Harry, the Hat. And the gang is getting together to have Harry help Coach get his money back from a con man. Where we have great lines like...
Well, that's Eddie the Mole. He's from Phoenix. They call him Mole Man, or Moley. In Philly, they call him Sid.
Sid?
Philly's a dull town.
And Harry effortlessly uses grifter slang throughout this episode. Coach is wonderfully clueless, but then we see the double cross underway and the tension just building. Coach apparently screwing up, but then at the end we reveal the triple cross with Coach laughing as everybody's dumbfounded, and Harry appears from the pool room saying, "One born every minute, eh, Coach?"
You had George Kahn that the two of you were working together while all along it was you and Coach.
You're not even close, Sam.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, that's it exactly.
It's a perfectly written and executed final twist. It thrills me every time. Even when I see it coming, my heart just races because I know it's coming even more so. And I love it so much. Those two actors, we were so blessed to have them while we did. And that makes this episode one of my hallmarks of Cheers.
Woody arrives for the first time and he asks for Coach. And we have to be told that Coach has since passed away in the interim since we watched Cheers last.
I'm a friend of Coach's. Is he around?
I'm sorry, Woody. I guess you hadn't heard. No, Coach passed away a couple months ago. But yeah, I'd like to think he's still around.
And it's a sweet moment. And there's another great moment later on in the episode with Diane where they talk about Coach having passed away. But I love that line. But that's not even the moment I'm thinking of. Is that I feel like that line that Sam has where he says, yeah, I like to think he's around, I think reverberates through the rest of the series. And I think, again, I haven't done the research exactly, but I'm pretty sure. I don't think there's a single season of Cheers after that where there isn't at least one reference to Coach, mostly by Sam. But the line I'm thinking of is in the fifth season where they do the Thanksgiving episode. They decide to toast all the people who aren't there to be part of it.
Now that we're done with dinner, I'd like to make a toast to our loved ones who weren't fortunate enough to be here
with
us.
Nice talk.
Mom, Dad, Uncle Fergie.
My kids.
There you are.
All right, Vera.
Yeah.
Ma.
Coach.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
And I love that moment. And I love the idea that Coach is never far from Sam's thoughts. You know, I don't want to get like too sad with it because it's a sitcom, but I like the idea that Coach and Sam were so close that Coach being gone is just kind of never far from Sam's, you know, like he's got it at the tip of his tongue and he can mention Coach at a moment's notice. And I like that mention. There's other mentions later on in the series that I think are great, but that one's always one of my favorites. So in a weird way, that's like my weird favorite Sam moment is that he takes that moment to say, hey, let's toast Coach, who's not here.
My fourth pick takes us back to season one. And Norm walks into the bar. Everyone shouts, Norm! And then you can just barely hear it. But Diane goes, Norman? Well played. Cheers, writers. Well played.
One of my favorite Frasier scenes from Never Love a Goalie, parts one and two. And what happens is that Frasier's depressed. Bombo the chimp has died. Bombo was what he considers a psychological colleague. And in the main story, Carla has gotten a pair of hockey tickets from Eddie Lebeque. And Sam wants Frasier to go to the hockey game with Carla, take the other ticket to get his mind off of Bombo and tells him, like, Bombo would want you to go. So Frasier says he's going to go to observe what makes the average person turn into an animal at a sporting event. He's very academic about it. And when Carla comes back, she doesn't have Frasier with her. Frasier has been taken off in the security van. He comes in.
Dr. Frasier Crane, noted psychiatrist, winner of the Mildred Bergen Fellowship, author of 27 published articles, is out on bail.
He got in a fist fight with the cowboy, basically, at the hockey game. And then a bit later, he's watching a hockey game in the bar with Norman Cliff, and he's like yelling at the TV about a referee's penalty call. And he's like, he calls that slashing, and Norm says the guy nearly cut another player in half, and Frasier's like, oh, ticky-tack, it's a wussy call, let the guys play the game. It's just this entire demeanor change for Frasier across that whole episode. So I thought that was a fun story for him.
Another amazing thing about Cheers is that in spite of it having so many hilarious jokes, it could bring real heart to the character. And for me, one of the biggest moments I think of for Sam was back in season 1, episode 10's Endless Slumper with his lucky bottle cap. He admits to Diane why this bottle cap helped him stay sober.
It's the cap off the last bottle of beer I ever drank. The last anything I ever drank. I remember holding on to that bottle cap during some pretty rough nights. I mean, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd have its imprint in my palm. I mean, it was flat because I was squeezing it so hard. When I was tempted to have a drink, sometimes I'd look at the bottle cap and it would stop me.
And the bottle cap is lost because Sam, being a good guy, lets a younger ball player take it, even though he then has a string of horrible accidents that just get worse and worse as time goes on. But the tension and despair and anger that Sam has at being in a bar and the one thing that he's counted on to keep him from drinking is gone, and Diane's desperation to help him, even though she can't. He has to fight this battle himself. And he faces that glass of beer and does his patented bar slide around the corner. It's just glorious. This episode is why Sam is the hero of this show that we all root for no matter what he does. It's just one of Sam's best moments.
It's hard to pick just one. Sam was the heart of our show. He is the friend that we wish we all had. He had his faults. He was quite the womanizer. He also had a problem with alcohol that he did seem to beat, which is wonderful. It's crazy to say that this womanizing man would be the moral compass of the show, the moral center. But in a way, he really was. Again, he's the friend that we all wish we had and that you could rely on.
I hear he hasn't stopped fooling around since he got down there.
You had him watched?
I didn't have to. The man's escapades have become legendary. The Indians in the mountains sing a folk song about him.
And Cheers, of course, is a comedy. But at its core, I think it really has something to teach all of us about life, about love, about being down on your luck, and how to get through it. I think a fact we often miss about Sam is that he was much smarter than we gave him credit for. And I would say he's even a poet.
Controversy gonna take a stand, won't show no mercy. A lot of folks say Jock should be doing the sports news on TV. I don't wanna hear the latest scores from a punchbowl broadcast school board. So get your scores from a guy like me who knows what it's like to have a groin injury.
The episode is Adventures in House Sitting. Rebecca is house sitting for her boss, Mr. Sheridan, and she is watching his dog, Satan. Sam gets the bright idea to break into the house to try and get Rebecca to go to bed, as always. And then there ends up being two dogs. It's very farcical. And Mr. Sheridan comes home. He's in the kitchen. He's battling who he thinks is his dog, Buster, but it's really the attack dog, Satan. Rebecca comes out and tells Sam,
Sam, get that mutt out of here.
What?
Sheridan's in the kitchen with Satan.
This is no time for folk singing.
It comes out of nowhere, and it's one of the best lines in Cheers history. And once again, just like the other two, always makes me laugh. I can always, even if I'm walking down the street and it pops into my head, I can bust out laughing out loud. And that's the magic of Cheers.
My number one moment, and I think you'd probably predict what my number one moment is, when they think that the bar is being, or the bar has been cursed, Carla throws out,
who is the biggest bigwig of them all?
Sinatra.
No, even bigger.
Ronald Reagan.
No, bigger.
Sinatra.
It's just one of the funniest moments on any show I've ever seen. I'm sure I'm not doing any of these moments justice. They really are just hilarious, and at least in my mind.
That's fascinating. Everyone else in the world, at the end of the evening, goes to their homes. You people come to this bar.
For Norm's tab, he had zero new beers this episode, so his total for the series remains at 864. I'm not going to award an official MVP for this episode, but if I did, it would probably be John Ratzenberger. He's got a few good lines when comparing himself to the character of Cliff. Runner-up would be Ted Danson, saying that the role of Sam Malone is to service the Queen Bee. As I wrap up this episode, I am not going to sum up all of my thoughts on Cheers and the whole show and what it means to me, because that will come after the series finale. This is a milestone in the life of the sitcom that, if you recall, ranked dead last in viewer ratings when it first premiered. But for the podcast, this is just another Thursday. Someone on a recent episode mentioned that a lot of times with shows that run for so long, you get to the point where the quality starts to lag. The writing feels uninspired. It doesn't hold up. I don't think Cheers ever got to that point. There are some overarching elements of seasons 10 and 11 that I don't think worked or they didn't hit as hard. But on the whole, it doesn't drag the show down because the episodes are still so damn funny. Cheers may have lost its dramatic and its emotional anchor when Diane left, but the series more than made up for it with pound-for-pound funnier jokes and a richer, fuller supporting cast. And that cast is about to get two huge jolts of electricity in the form of new recurring characters, the first one making his debut the very next episode. Until then, I want to thank my guests who appeared on this special. Rick Heineken, AJ Wright, Rob Kelly, Marlene Stemme, Vicky DeCiper, Paul Spataro, Al Sedano, Brandon Davis, Tim Price, and Siskoid. I also want to thank all of the rest of my guests who have helped me along up to this point. You all make this such a fun and fulfilling experience for me. Be glad there's one place in the world. And of course, thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed. Where everybody knows your name.
Number 5. It's a similar moment from a different episode, but it hits differently because it's during the teaser. Norm walks into Cheers to shouts of, "Norm!" And Diane is behind the bar and she goes, "Norman?" My number 6.